grands entretiens du musée de la SACEM avec Stéphane Le Rouge.
Bonjour à tous. Au Festival de Cannes 2023, la leçon de musique SACEM célèbre une légende vivante de la musique de film, le Canadien Howard Shore, complice de Martin Scorsese, David Fincher, Arnaud Desplechin et bien évidemment de Peter Jackson, le temps de deux triptyques hors proportion, Le Seigneur des Anneaux et Le Hobbit. Depuis plus de 40 ans, Shore est l'un des compositeurs les plus novateurs du cinéma contemporain. Dans le Toronto des années 50-60, sa vocation est façonnée par plusieurs révélations successives, celles du jazz moderne, de la seconde école de Vienne, sans oublier le choc fondateur face à l'écriture de John Cage et de Takemitsu. Il nous raconte cette période fondatrice et son lien singulier avec un camarade de lycée, un certain David Cronenberg, qui allait le mettre sur les rails de son destin.
Well, I didn't plan on being a composer. You have to go back with me to the early 50s. I grew up in Canada, in Toronto. And in Canada, they did a test in the 1950s where they tested every student from coast to coast. Every student was given this kind of a computer electronic test to study their hearing, to see who were the possible musicians, who were the artists in the country. And scoring high on the test, the schools that I was in, the public school, offered you an instrument. And they offered a violin. I was only about 9 years old. I didn't want to play the violin. I thought I'd get beat up probably after school, carrying it around. So I didn't want the flute either, but the clarinet I liked because it meant jazz, and I liked Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller, and my parents had those records. So I studied the clarinet with a man named Morris Weinzweig, taught his young student, Howard, the clarinet, and gave him counterpoint and harmony exercises to write every week. So he got me writing with a pencil at about 9-10 years old. And frankly, I've just been carrying on that pencil for 40-50 years now. It's been just a stream of writing. So it wasn't a goal to become a composer. It was something that happened kind of organically. I didn't have the desire. I liked music, but I did some acting, I did some directing, and I could have gone different ways. But music sort of became the thing that I studied. Well, David Cronenberg grew up in the same neighborhood that I did in Toronto. And if you lived in Toronto during that period of the 60s, his films were important. Everybody knew about David. And he had a beautiful motorcycle. And he, well, you know, when you're 14 years old, and he's a little older than I am, he would be 17. And you'd see him in the neighborhood in that beautiful motorcycle, and he had leather jacket and stuff, you know. So, I mean, he was well known. And I had seen his films, you know, in late night, midnight showings and underground film festivals, which they had in the 60s. And I knew his films, but I didn't approach him to work on any of his films for a long time. David made 8mm, 16mm films before he made 35mm films. Cronenberg took me on to do the film The Brood, and that's how, you know, we started our collaboration. I've worked now with David for a long time, over 30 years, and we've done 16 films together now, working on the 17th. You know, I think since the beginning of working on the Cronenberg films, one has led to another. the brood led to scanners, which was actually all analog technology, and the electronics were all analog. It was all tape, using tape loops, an older form of editing electronic music, and which led to Videodrome, which was the first digital electronic score I did, which then led to The Fly, which was completely symphonic score, and then did ringers, and they became more symphonic, and I used orchestras more extensively. If we didn't have the budget, we would do scores like Crash or Spider, more guerrilla filmmaking, as David would call it. Well, to get to the two harps, previously to that, to M. Butterfly, I'd use one harp in the orchestra. I'd place it left of the podium. And M. Butterfly, I used two harps. I placed them left and right and created a stereo image with the harps. And then I wrote a two-part counterpoint for the harps. And then I wanted to, between the films, extend the use of the counterpoint. So I wrote a piece for three-part counterpoint, and I thought it'd be interesting to use that with three harps. So here was my interest in music kind of driving the film that I hadn't even scored yet. I was just writing this piece for three-part counterpoint. And then I applied the three parts to the music of Crash. And it became six electric guitars, two playing each harp part. And then I added all metal percussion, as you would say, for the machine part of it. And then for the warmth, there's three woodwinds, that play solos with that combination. So it's that similar combination to this, using the electronics and the warmth of the acoustic instrument was something I had been doing years before this. So really it's been a very linear process of writing that became, this whole thread of Cronenberg. He gave me so much room to experiment that it went off in tangents into films like Silence of the Lambs and Seven, and, it took me into other areas.
Howard nous raconte comment, pour un compositeur pour l'image, tout est question d'interprétation, de subjectivité, en un mot, de point de vue.
Film music is a lot about point of view, and how you use it is really has to do with, what you're trying to express in the film. I know with Marty, with Martin Scorsese, we'll see it soon. I hope, and when we were looking at The Departed, he said to me, these characters are all duplicitous, they're all dancing around each other. And he said, maybe it's a tango, and it was just the word tango. And I went off and wrote a tango and started working with those rhythms in the film. With Jonathan Demme on Silence of the Lambs, he said, take the point of view of Clarice Starling, which was unusual at the time for a thriller, because usually we take the Hannibal Lecter, the bigger character on screen. And by taking the point of view of Clarice Starling, Jodie Foster's character, I brought out some more of the humanity of that character. And I think that broadened the scope of the narrative of the film. So it can just be a word or a gesture, really, that takes you off on a certain way. And what you want to do with the first playing of your music is just think thematically. Don't look at the film. I don't look at the film too much in the beginning. I like to read. So I studied the screenplay. And I think this is maybe something that I've developed over the years, but I like to work with the words for quite a while. And if the screenplay is based on a novel, like J.G. Ballard's Crash, or that we just saw, or William Burroughs' Naked Lunch, so I study the period and I research the period and try to delve into the world that the film's going to be based on, but not looking at the film, just thinking about the authorship of the story and the heart of the story. And that's really what you want to present when you first play some music for your director collaborator, is the, you know, is that heart, is what you feel in your heart that expresses your music to the story. And it could be 8 bars or 16 bars, 24 bars. It doesn't have to be connected to the film. You want to write something from your heart about the subject and then collect pieces every day, like I do, like a journal of music. And it could just be a few bars every day you're writing or recording little pieces. And then they add up. And then once you have a catalog, really, of themes and motifs, then you should approach the film. Sometimes you can watch the film once as a narrative, as an audience member, and you have a certain emotion when you see the film, so you're writing to those feelings. You're not looking at the film, you're just remembering, recalling what you felt when you sat in the cinema and saw the film for the first time, because you want to capture that feeling. And then, of course, as the film is edited and you see the whole film, and you're into scoring it, it becomes more technical. You're trying to apply your themes and motifs based on your dreaming part of it into the actual reality of scoring the film. So think of it as a linear process. It's not a one-step process of scoring films. It's like, you know, composition and then editing into the film. And then it's recording, orchestration, recording, producing, conducting. I mean, they're all separate functions.
Par rapport à la mélodie, à l'harmonie, au rythme, Howard nous raconte de quelle façon lui vient l'inspiration.
To me, it's a feeling. I think music is an emotional language, so I'm trying to express a feeling that I have about the subject. My scores are written in pencil and sketches in pencil, and then I do the orchestrations, the 30 stave in ink. And it's a visual process to me for quite a while. I'm not thinking so much about colors or orchestration or anything, but I'm thinking more in terms of tempo, meter, counterpoint, harmonic progression. So it's again, a step-by-step process of creating the counterpoint and the harmony for the piece you want to write. And what you're doing is expressing the ideas emotionally of what you feel and trying to put that on paper. And then you're trying to get a performance of it as to who's going to play it and where will the recording take place and what are the physics of the room, the placement of the microphones, all of those things that leads to a great recording. You know, the need is always to serve the film, to do what the film needs. But I think I was trying to bring my music ideas into the film. So I was combining what I was interested in musically with the needs of the film, and I was trying to make these two things function well together.
En 1995, Howard Shore a la chance d'effectuer une rencontre météore avec le génial Tim Burton sur Ed Wood, avec une partition ovniesque pour thérémine soliste sur rythme afro-cubain.
The thing that was great about working with Ed Wood was you couldn't do anything wrong because every mistake was golden. It was like, because, you know, it just, he was considered one of the worst filmmakers.
The worst.
Yeah, so, but it was a fantastic project. I love that period. That late 50s period, and Naked Lunch also set in that same period. It was just, you know, Tim Burton has a great heart, and he brought out the humanity of the man of the story. No, Lydia Kavina played the theremin. She's a virtuoso. She was related to the inventor. She lives in Oxford, England. She's the great thereminist. But I used that instrument. It was developed in the 1920s. Period, and it's one of the first electronic instruments. It has a relationship to science fiction films, but really it was designed as a concert instrument. The influence of Cuban music and into America, like Desi Arnaz and I Love Lucy Show, you know, brought in those elements, and it was around the same period. So, yeah, I'm combining the Afro-Cuban rhythm.